Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, August 29th, 2019. Coming up this hour.
Stock futures rise after China indicates it won't retaliate against the newest U.S. tariffs.
In an exclusive interview, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin tells us ultra-long bonds are under very serious consideration.
And the second reading of U.S. GDP may point to slightly lower economic growth.
Dorian spares Puerto Rico, but the storm is gaining strength for Florida. Plus, another name is out of the presidential race. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshauer in sports. Mets fell way behind, fell short, lost to the Cubs, their fifth loss in a row. Yankees finished a sweep in Seattle. Serena Williams won last night at the U.S. Open.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Portfolio Analyst, powered by Interactive Brokers. Savvy investors use Portfolio Analyst to create a consolidated view of their finances and check the health of their complete financial portfolio. Download for free at ibkr.com/PA.
And U.S. stock index futures and European shares are rising on trade optimism. It's 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 26 points, Dow futures up 245, NASDAQ futures up 89. The DAX in Germany is up 1.25%, CAC in Paris up 1.5%, and the FTSE 100 up 1.1%. Nikkei 225 in Japan was down 0.1%, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong up 0.3%. 10-year Treasury down 5/32, yield 1.49%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.52%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.7% or 39 cents at $56.16 a barrel. COMEX gold is down about 0.1% on 90 cents to $15.48.30 an ounce. The euro, 1.1077 against the dollar. The yen at 106.22. Nathan.
Karen, the rise in futures follows new trade developments out of China this morning. We get the very latest from Bloomberg News Managing Editor Emma O'Brien in Beijing.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. In his weekly briefing to the press, Chinese Commerce Ministry spokesperson Gao Shuang signaled the country won't retaliate against the latest round of U.S. tariffs. Gao said that the focus should be on removing levies, not escalating the trade war, and that the two sides are in discussions about meeting in the U.S. in September. It's a markedly different tone to the atmosphere of confrontation that has been in place between the two sides over the past few weeks. Gao also said China won't crack down on foreign companies and that escalating the fight over trade between the two largest economies wasn't good for the world. In Beijing, I'm Emma O'Brien, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Emma, thank you. In an exclusive interview with Bloomberg, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said issuing ultra-long U.S. bonds is under very serious consideration in the Trump administration. We get the details from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellet.
It possibly sets up a move that would mark a historic revamp of the $16 trillion Treasuries market. Mnuchin said, quote, if the conditions are right, then I would anticipate we'll take advantage of long-term borrowing and execute on that. He said officials held a meeting earlier in the day to review the possibility. The concept of issuing 50 or 100-year bonds dates to at least 2009 and has recently gained traction within Treasury. Charlie Pellet, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thanks. Two policymakers are suggesting headwinds confronting the U.S. economy might warrant further rate cuts. The comments by regional presidents Robert Kaplan and Mary Daly reinforce Fed Chairman Jerome Powell's message that a September reduction is likely. Speaking to Bloomberg Television in Asia, San Francisco Fed Chief Daly said she was worried that negative sentiment surrounding the U.S. economy could be self-fulfilling.
All of these moods will actually get ahead of the data and it could become a self-fulfilling prophecy, one that actually makes it harder for us to sustain the expansion and achieve our goals.
Daly is not a voter this year on the rate-setting FOMC.
Later this morning, the government issues revised data on second quarter GDP. Economists are forecasting that it'll change, with economic growth running at a 2% pace. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
Bloomberg Economics says business inventory growth and government construction spending could make a smaller contribution to the second quarter revision, but consumer spending could be bumped higher. In its initial GDP report, the government estimated the economy expanded at a 2.1% pace, slower than the fourth quarter's 3.1%. Today's report will also offer a first look at second quarter corporate profits. Vinny Dell, Judice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thanks. Germany's labor market looks like it's starting to crack under the weight of a manufacturing recession, raising the pressure for the government to respond with fiscal stimulus. The number of people out of work increased by 4,000 to 2.29 million in August. That's the fourth straight month that joblessness failed to drop after 6 years of almost continuous decline.
The pound is holding losses after UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson moved to suspend Parliament. Let's get the very latest live from Bloomberg Sebastian Salek in London. Sebastian, good morning.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Boris Johnson has thrown the gauntlet on Brexit after the Queen granted permission to suspend Parliament. That effectively gives the Prime Minister's opponents 2 weeks to come up with a way to pass a law to stop Britain crashing out of the EU on October the 31st. The decision outraged critics and is serving as a unifying force for the disparate opposition. The backlash has also been felt outside of Westminster with protests around Britain and a petition to block the move gaining more than 1 million signatures. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salek, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Sebastian, thank you. Staying in Europe, shares of Micro Focus have lost more than a quarter of their value. The UK software company cut its outlook for full-year revenue. It blames a worsening macro environment and growing uncertainty among its clients.
Pernod Ricard reported its strongest annual earnings growth in 7 years, fueled by Chinese demand. It also announced a $1.1 billion share buyback. The company also announced the $223 million purchase of New York-based Castle Brands to add Jefferson's Bourbon to its portfolio. The stock is up 1% this morning.
Dell reports after the closing bell. Bloomberg Intelligence says Dell's full-year sales may be pushed toward the lower end of its $93 to $96 billion guidance range, or even below, amid weakness in global corporate IT spending.
Bloomberg News has learned Forever 21 is preparing for a potential bankruptcy. Sources say the company has been in talks for additional financing and working with a team of advisors to help it restructure its debt. But negotiations with possible lenders have so far stalled, the people said. Forever 21 operates more than 800 stores in the U.S., Europe, Asia, and Latin America. And futures this morning are moving higher straight ahead. We have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It's 6:07 on Wall Street. And time again to check in with Michael Barnes, see what else is happening in the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Hurricane Dorian is moving out over open waters after doing limited damage in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. Forecasters warn it is gaining strength and is likely to grow into a dangerous storm while heading toward the northern Bahamas and Florida's east coast. Dorian is expected to strengthen into a dangerous Category 3 hurricane before it passes near or over the northern Bahamas on Saturday and closes in on Florida. Jack Bevin is with the National Hurricane Center.
The expected landfall would be around, given the current forecast, would be sometime on Sunday or probably Monday.
Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez.
Now is the time, if you don't have that plan, put that plan together. If you do need to evacuate, find a friend's home or another relative's home, which you can go to and be safe. That's not an evacuation zone.
Many stores in South Florida are limiting water purchases to 4 cases per customer. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is dropping out of the presidential race. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
She did it in a video.
Hey, everyone. I wanted you to hear it from me first. But after more than 8 incredible months, I'm ending my presidential campaign.
Gillibrand entered the race on the theme of women's rights, but found the field crowded with other women with the same message.
I know this isn't the result we wanted. We wanted to win this race. But it's important to know when it's not your time.
She had tweeted just hours before the next debate deadline that she was getting close to the goal, but she fell short. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Senator Kamala Harris vows to increase grants and strengthen rules aimed at bolstering opportunity for people with disabilities if she's elected president. Her campaign said that a Harris proposal released today would enhance Department of Education programs aimed at helping disabled people get jobs. It's a potential new threat from North Korea. Military analysts say satellite images indicate Kim Jong-un's regime may be building a submarine capable of launching nuclear missiles. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air, and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashire.
Nathan, the Mets have lost as many games in the last 5 days as they did in the previous 4 weeks. After winning 21 of 26, getting right into the thick of the pennant race, 5 straight losses, all at home where the Mets had been good all season. They fell behind the Cubs 10-1 in the third inning. They did battle back. They cut it to 10-7. They had the tying run at the plate in the bottom of the ninth with nobody out and couldn't get a run in, let alone three. The Cubs won 10-7. Noah Syndergaard, who had been pitching well, didn't have it. Gave up all 10. All but one was earned. Worst start of his career. Mets fall 4 games out for a wild card. They'll start Jacob DeGrom tonight, and they need a win. Yankees, a well-deserved day off, back home from a road trip that began with 3 losses in Oakland, but they went 2-1 in L.A. They had a sweep in Seattle. Aaron Boone after yesterday's 7-3 victory over the Mariners.
From a mindset standpoint, I've never had reason to be concerned with these guys and what they're going to bring for the next day, for the next series. And I think that's why I was confident going on to L.A. and coming up here. And for us to take care of the business the way we did today after a tough start to this trip and finish off a really good West Coast really says a lot about those guys out there.
James Paxton beat Justus Sheffield, the battle of lefties who were traded for each other last winter. 4 more Yankee home runs. Gary Sanchez in the first inning of his 30th of the year. Later, DJ LeMahieu, Mike Ford, Aaron Judge. Ford's hit 4 homers in 4 games. Judge has hit 5 in the last 6. Serena Williams last night against 17-year-old American Katie McNally. Serena won, but it wasn't easy. She needed 3 sets. This after Venus Williams lost her second-round match at the U.S. Open. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanchell. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. Let's take a look at the markets now. Getting a lift this morning on the latest China trade news. S&P futures are higher by 26.5 points right now. Dow futures up 249, and NASDAQ futures are higher by 93 points. DAX in Germany up 1.2%. The CAC in Paris up 1.5%, just about. 10 years down, 3/32nds yield 1.49%, and the 2-year Treasury yield 1.51%. The euro is at 1.1074 against the dollar. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's just before 6:12 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we check in with Bloomberg chief U.S. economist Carl Riccadonna ahead of the latest read on U.S. growth, what it could mean for the Fed's rate decision in just a couple weeks here. This is Bloomberg. Good morning.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are climbing along with U.S. stock index futures after China indicated it would not immediately retaliate against the latest U.S. tariff increase. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up about 28 points. Dow futures up 260. NASDAQ futures up 95. The DAX in Germany is up 1.2%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32nds, yield 1.49%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.52%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.7% or 38 cents at $56.16 a barrel. COMEX gold little change at $15.48.70 an ounce. The euro, 1.1077 against the dollar. The British pound, 1.2201. And the yen at 106.23. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, forecasters are warning that Hurricane Dorian is gaining strength and will probably grow into a Category 3 hurricane as it heads towards the northern Bahamas and Florida's east coast. The storm did little damage to Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. President Sergio Mattarella gave Giuseppe Conte, Italy's outgoing prime minister, a mandate to form a new government. Mattarella wants Conte to iron out the differences between the Five Star Movement and the center-left Democratic Party and form a working coalition. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand has dropped out of the 2020 presidential race. In baseball, the Yankees won, the Mets lost, the Nationals beat the Orioles 8-4, the Red Sox were winners, the A's lost. In tennis at the U.S. Open, Serena Williams and Roger Federer advanced. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. 6:19 on Wall Street now, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Joining us now, Carl Riccadonna, Chief U.S. Economist for Bloomberg Economics, as we await the latest read on the health of the U.S. economy, the revised GDP number for the second quarter. What are you going to be looking for from today's revision to give us a better snapshot of how things are going?
Absolutely. Good morning. The second print on GDP still contains some new information, and that new information will be on economy-wide corporate profits. That's an important barometer of health in the private sector, and so we'll be looking to see if profits sink for a second consecutive quarter. Back in Q1, we saw a decline of about 3.8%. So it's not unusual that we might have a couple quarters where profits are sinking, but if we have a prolonged sag, that often can be a precursor of recession. And so with the inversion of the yield curve really heightening that scrutiny of whether the economy is on the brink, another weak print on corporate profits would only add to that narrative.
Is that a better harbinger of recession for you than the yield curve inversion?
Well, yield curve inversion, this time is a very unique development because normally the yield curve inverts as yields are moving higher, especially in the short end. This time around, we're seeing an inversion, really a bull inversion of the yield curve, which is unique and very different from prior episodes. So there's plenty of reason to believe that the signal from a yield curve inversion is not the same as what it ordinarily is in the current environment. The other factor that I would add in there, with central banks holding such a huge supply of sovereign debt, that may also be distorting the signal. We also have this weak global growth outlook, which is leading this appetite for U.S. yields, and that may be depressing things as well. So we should be moderately concerned by the inversion of the yield curve, but I'm far from buying into the notion that this is a guarantee that we're heading to recession. In fact, my own team's analysis shows that the likelihood of a recession over the course of the next year or through the end of 2020, really, is only about 12 to 15%.
All right. In terms of what we could get from the read on corporate profits and earnings from this GDP print, are you thinking that we'll get a better picture of whether the trade war with China is starting to weigh on U.S. corporates?
Well, that weighs into the profit outlook without a doubt. So, in fact, at the headline, we're looking for GDP to be revised down. The first print was 2.1%. We're looking for that to go all the way down to 1.8%. Consensus only looks for a decline to 2%. But in an environment where growth is slowing, typically the profit outlook diminishes as well. So I'm not particularly optimistic that we'll see a strong rebound in profits. What I'll be looking for and really hoping for is that we don't see further deterioration in the rate of decline, just a slow growth environment with kind of sideways movement on the economy-wide corporate profit landscape.
Up to now, the consumer has really been driving this economy, particularly with the trade headwinds. Do you expect that to continue?
That looks to continue, and that's a very critical point here. So corporate profits, which we've been discussing, are a key driver of private sector decision-making, and that can be business investment or it can be decisions to hire workers. And when we look at the pace of hiring, the pace of income creation in the economy, and even household confidence, which we saw just earlier this week, consumer confidence really posting a strong result, household spending looks poised to be a very critical driver of the economy, and it doesn't look like it's downshifting in any degree that should worry us about overall momentum faltering. Consumer spending was strong in July. We'll look to see if the volatility in the equity market in particular maybe rattled their decisions in the month of August. We'll get more clarity as we see unit motor vehicle sales and retail sales for the month. But given where confidence is running, it looks like that buying momentum is still certainly holding up.
And in our last 30 seconds here, of course, the Fed makes its decision in just a few weeks here. The market is all but expecting that there will be a cut. Is there anything to take thinking off that path at this point?
Well, I think the Fed is trying to cheerlead the economy to some degree so as not to feed expectations of a cut of more than 25 basis points. That being said, the Fed is acknowledging a strong economy, but also wants to uninvert the yield curve. That means they'll cut 25 bips per meeting. Until they accomplish that, My team's view is that means 25 basis point cuts in September, again in October, and again in December of this year. If the yield curve is still inverted at that point, which I don't think it will be, they could extend cuts into 2020 as well.
All right. Carl Riccadonna, Chief U.S. Economist for Bloomberg Economics. Always good having you on. Again, the second print on second quarter, gross domestic product due out at 8:30 Wall Street time. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Brought to you by the new Range Rover Evoque, designed to open your eyes to the possibilities of what's right in your own neighborhood. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for the new Range Rover Evoque. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are rising on the latest trade headlines out of Asia. Begin more from Bloomberg News Managing Editor Emma O'Brien in Beijing.
We had the weekly briefing by the Commerce Ministry here in Beijing today. The spokesperson there, Gao Shuang, he signaled that the country won't retaliate against the latest round of U.S. tariffs. A little bit of a dial back there. Gao said that the focus should be on removing levies, not escalating the trade war, and that the two sides had actually been in discussions about meeting in the US in September. It is a really different tone to the atmosphere of confrontation that's been in place between the two sides over the past few weeks, maybe even the past few months. Gao also said quite pointedly that China won't crack down on foreign companies. This is in reference to this blacklist that China had warned about, and that escalating the fight over trade between the two largest economies in the world just really wasn't good for the globe.
Bloomberg News Managing Editor Emma O'Brien in Beijing. In other news we're following this morning, the Trump administration is giving careful thought to selling something Wall Street may not be ready to buy, ultra-long debt. In an exclusive interview, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin tells Bloomberg that offering bonds with maturities of 50 to 100 years is under very serious consideration.
In 2 hours from now, the government issues revised data on second quarter GDP. The forecast is for economic growth at a 2% pace.
Sony has agreed to sell its 5% stake in Olympus back to the healthcare devices company. It's one of several moves that American activist investor Dan Loeb had suggested the Japanese technology giant make.
Sources say Forever 21 is preparing for a potential bankruptcy filing as the fashion retailer's cash dwindles and turnaround options fade. The move would help it shed unprofitable stores and recapitalize the business.
And shares of Box are down 8% in early trading. The company, which develops internet applications, forecast third quarter sales that trailed analyst estimates. Dell Technologies reports this afternoon.
And futures this morning are higher. S&P futures up about 28 points. Dow futures up 260. NASDAQ futures up 96. The DAX in Germany's up 1.2%. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 1.48%. The yield on the two-year at 1.52%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.6% or 33 cents at $56.11 a barrel. COMEX gold down about 0.1% on $1.10 to $15.48 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1075 against the dollar. The British pound is at 1.22 and the yen at 106.23. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. 6:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. People in Puerto Rico are breathing a sigh of relief as Hurricane Dorian largely bypassed the Caribbean island. Officials had prepared for the worst, especially after the Hurricane Maria catastrophe in 2017. Now, Dorian is forecast to grow into a dangerous Category 3 hurricane by the time it makes landfall in Florida. Jack Bevin is with the National Hurricane Center.
There's a chance in 4 or 5 days' time it could be near or over portions of Florida or the southeastern United States, although it's too early to pinpoint any specific area that's most threatened.
A state of emergency has been declared in Florida. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand says she is dropping out of the race for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination. Gillibrand made the announcement in a video posted to her Twitter account.
I know this isn't the result we wanted. We wanted to win this race. But it's important to know when it's not your time.
Gillibrand failed to meet the minimum thresholds for a required number of donors and polling to qualify for the September Democratic debate in Houston. The Trump Organization doesn't have to pay most of the legal fees racked up by the president's former personal lawyer. A state court judge in New York dismissed much of Michael Cohen's lawsuit, in which he sought almost $4 million. The company had urged the judge to throw out the suit, claiming Cohen was just hoping to score a payday. The Department of Defense says we can expect regular press briefings. In his first briefing as Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper says that while the department is hopeful a diplomatic resolution can come about with Iran, they are not yet ready to stand down.
I'm not sure I'm ready to call the crisis over yet, but so far, so good. And we hope the trend lines continue that way. And we hope that the parties, that the Iranians would agree to talk, meet and talk and help us resolve these issues.
Police officers in New York want the mayor and the commissioner to resign. According to observers, they also may be taking part in a work slowdown. It's happening in the wake of the firing of a white police officer, Daniel Pantaleo, who played a role in the death of Eric Garner, a black man on Staten Island 5 years ago. The Labor Day weekend is one of the busiest travel weekends of the year. Today and Tuesday are expected to be the most popular days to travel. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. 6:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, the Mets were so hot, they were bound to cool off somewhat, especially playing better teams. The surprise is five straight losses all at home, where the Mets have been 37-21. Only twice all year have they lost as many as three straight home games. The Cubs won 10-7, a game where Chicago led 10-1 in the third inning. Noah Syndergaard gave up all 10. Mets rallied in the bottom of the ninth. They had the tying run at the plate with nobody out, but couldn't get one run in, let alone three. And they're now four games out for a playoff spot. They've got Jacob DeGrom going tonight. Yankees won 7-3 in Seattle for a series sweep. Ex-Mariner James Paxton gave up only one hit. Four more Yankee home runs, including Aaron Judge, who's homered in five of the last six games. Yanks off tonight. They'll host Oakland tomorrow, try to get some revenge on the A's, who swept them last week. U.S. Open, most of the matches were rained out, except those in Ash and Armstrong, where they can close the roof. Second straight match where Roger Federer fell behind but won in four sets. Novak Djokovic, straight sets despite an ailing left shoulder. Venus Williams is out second round. Serena won last night, needed three sets to beat 17-year-old Katie McNally. NFL preseason ends tonight. Giants at New England. Both teams, for what it's worth, are 3-0. Daniel Jones will be the Giants' starting quarterback. The Jets will host the Eagles. Coach Adam Gase on what this game is all about.
For us, it's, you know, there's a lot of guys that are going to be playing for their job here, but they're also putting out film for the rest of the league. There's a lot of guys that are going to get released here over the next 5 days or so, and you know, other teams will, they might have interest in somebody, so it's just about putting out the right film.
A lot of teams hardly played their starters at all this preseason. They have always rarely played in the final one. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thanks. 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson's plan to suspend Parliament is hardly the coup some opponents have claimed. Even so, the move is shabby politics. On Wednesday, Johnson asked the Queen to prorogue the legislature for 5 weeks before beginning a new session in mid-October, some 2 weeks before the Brexit deadline. This isn't unprecedented or unlawful, but proposed at a moment of national crisis, this will be the longest such suspension in decades. And Johnson's stated justification, that it's necessary to introduce a bold and ambitious domestic agenda, is dubious. More than anything, Johnson has demonstrated the weakness of his own position. He's an unelected prime minister heading a minority government, and his unpopular negotiating position is pointing the country toward calamity. To escape this bind, he's chosen a tactical maneuvering rather than leadership. Johnson supporters think suspending Parliament is a cunning move. It's better understood as an act of desperation. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Opinion Editorial Board. I'm David Shipley. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPI and go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. Changes may be coming to a law that prevents doctors from referring patients to facilities where they hold a financial stake. Nancy Lyons reports from the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
It's called the Stark Law,
and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services says it gets in the way of efforts to move to a healthcare system that relies more on value than volume.
Doctors and hospitals are saying, well, if we move from this fee-for-service model to this value-based care model, then you wouldn't have as many concerns about the fraud and abuse that the law was originally designed in the late 80s to address.
Bloomberg Law's Lydia Wheeler says proposed changes to the Stark Law are expected to be released this fall. In Washington, Nancy Lyons, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, Nancy, thank you. 6:39 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
When it comes to bananas around the world, it's all about the Cavendish. Scientists have long warned the industry not to put all its bananas in the same bunch, and now there's growing concern over the global market's dependence on the single variety that's favored around the world. In recent years, banana growers have been fighting a destructive fungus that has now made its long-dreaded arrival in Latin America. This month, the fungus was confirmed in Colombia, a major exporter, prompting officials in the country to declare a state of emergency. Banana industry watchers say it's more proof the days of the Cavendish are numbered. It's happened before. In the 1950s, the Gros Michel banana, which was bigger, sweeter, and heartier than the bananas we eat now, lost its battle with the fungus and became virtually extinct, prompting the shift to the Cavendish. Fortunately, experts say there's still time to find alternatives, but it's likely to prove costly to the industry, no matter how you slice it. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
Ah, Bob, thank you. We've got S&P futures higher by 28 points right now. Dow futures ahead by 268 points, and NASDAQ futures are up almost 97 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's just before 6:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, changes made to policy for children of government service members born overseas. We'll talk about it with Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update brought to you by IBKR and CME Group. The new micro E-mini futures contracts are available at IBKR at the lowest commissions. Learn more at IBKR.com/CMEmini. And futures are higher this morning. We go to the First Word breaking news desk for today's morning call. Here's Bailey Lipschultz. Bailey, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. As you said, futures are rallying after China indicated it wouldn't immediately retaliate to those newest U.S. tariff increase. The Dow's up 265 points, S&P higher by 27, with the Nasdaq gaining 95 points. U.S. 10-year yield is at 1.49%, while Asian shares paired declines overnight as Shanghai slipped just 0.1%, and European markets are climbing, led by gains in France. Back in the U.S., on the economic front, at 8:30, second quarter GDP, initial jobless claims and wholesale inventories, and at 10 o'clock, pending home sales. After earnings, Nutanix jumped 19% on better-than-fourth quarter results. Ollie's Bargain tumbled after cutting its net sales forecast for the year. And Box shares are trading lower after its third-quarter sales view missed estimates. In deal news, Hudson Bay is selling the operations of its Lord & Taylor chain to Latote for $100 million, and Sony agreed to sell its stake in Olympus Corp for $760 million, a move investor Dan Loeb suggested back in June. And wrapping things up, Tapestry cut to market perform at Cowen, Sienna raised to buy over at Rosenblatt, and Casey's was downgraded to underperform at RBC. Live from the First Word Breaking News Desk, I'm Bailey Lipschultz. Karen?
All right, Bailey, thanks. To hear live breaking news over here at Bloomberg, type Squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K, and that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Hurricane Dorian is now taking aim at the southeastern U.S. as it churns in the Atlantic. People in Florida are stocking up on food, water, and gasoline as officials have declared a state of emergency. Puerto Rico was spared a direct hit, but power outages and flooding are reported. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand has pulled out of the presidential race. In baseball, the Yankees won, the Mets lost, the Nationals beat the Orioles 8-4. The Red Sox were winners, the A's lost. In tennis at the U.S. Open, Serena Williams and Roger Federer advanced. Venus Williams was eliminated. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg, a 12-hour work week could soon be the norm. I said a 12-hour work week.
All right.
And guess who said it?
Okay.
Jack Ma. Long outspoken advocate for China's extreme work culture. He told that to Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
People could work as little as 3 days a week, 4 hours a day, with the help of AI and a reformed education system.
Wow.
Nathan, it is a lot less than the Alibaba co-founder's previous endorsement of a brutal 12 hours a day, 6 days a week routine.
Yeah. Sounds like he's all about our robot overlords taking over. 12-hour working week. Yeah.
Well,
I get behind that.
I don't know. I'll probably wind up being a fire hydrant or something. I don't know. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Except your new robotic bosses. Thank you, Michael. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. We're at 6:50 on Wall Street. Time to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin telling Bloomberg in an exclusive interview that he is considering ultra-long bonds and hopeful for talks with China. A Republican senator now calling for a hearing on Federal Reserve independence after a Bloomberg opinion column from Bill Dudley, and Kirsten Gillibrand, the latest Democrat to drop out of the 2020 presidential race. Also making news this morning, the Trump administration tightening policy on children born overseas. For more, we're joined, as always, by the very hardworking Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter, no matter how long the work week is. Kate, thanks as always for being with us. This new directive from the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Agency caused quite a bit of confusion when it first came out late yesterday. Can you kind of walk us through what USCIS did yesterday?
Well, basically, this was an update to a policy that had been on the books. And I think given the crackdown both on illegal immigration or undocumented immigration, certainly, and also the attempts to, you know, make it more difficult for folks to legally immigrate to the U.S. Under the Trump administration, I think there was some concern out there about exactly what the scope of this new policy would be. But it looks like after some further investigation, essentially, no one who is a U.S. citizen would be affected by this. So if you're a U.S. citizen serving in the military overseas or working for the government in some other capacity and stationed overseas, you would not be affected by this policy. But who would be affected is folks who are in that position, either military members or those serving or those working for the government overseas who are not U.S.-born citizens. And for those folks, it sounds like there would be an extra step involved potentially if they were to adopt a child that for that child to get U.S. citizenship. It wouldn't necessarily automatically pass on. And so I think that it sounds like very few people would likely be affected by this policy, but for the people that are affected, it could be a very costly and time-consuming process to meet this new hurdle.
All right. In terms of the overall policy that the Trump administration is trying to put forward on legal immigration and sort of tightening the rules surrounding that, is that the effect here?
Well, certainly. And I think this is kind of another brick in the wall of the, you know, no pun intended about border walls, but, you know, another brick in the wall of the policies that the Trump administration is trying to put forth on immigration. You know, we had a report at Bloomberg just a couple weeks ago now that, you know, Stephen Miller, who's Trump's top immigration or senior advisor, his top immigration kind of guru, had some folks looking into whether or not it was possible to deny public school education to people who were, undocumented. Documented immigrants. So that was kind of an extreme example on immigration policy that didn't go anywhere. However, these are all just kind of chipping away at what the Trump administration sees as a way to lax immigration policy in the U.S.
What has been the reaction to this from either side of the immigration debate? Is there going to be any kind of challenge to this, given that it appears as though it might not affect as many people as had been initially thought?
Well, I think the fact that it is more limited in scope than originally thought will certainly eased the minds of a lot of folks at least a little bit. You know, however, again, for the people that are affected, it's going to create, you know, a bit of a challenge. And I think that sorting that out, you know, we don't really know how that's going to play out and how difficult it's going to be going forward for the people that are affected. As with any of these changes, I think the possibility of, you know, some kind of a legal or court challenge is always on the table. But I think that given the scope of what the Trump administration has been trying to do on other fronts, this may not be where the attention's focused right away.
All right. In the time we have left, let's get the latest on the Democratic presidential race. One fewer candidate in the wide pool here.
Yeah, there's still a whole bunch, but Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator, a junior senator from New York, did drop out yesterday after failing to qualify for the third debate, which is coming up in about 2 weeks in Houston. I think that we are likely to see a couple other people drop out potentially before the debate as well, given that, you know, only about 10 or so of the 20 members of the field actually qualified for the debate. And so I think that in some ways, Gillibrand's, you know, withdrawal from the race does leave a bit of an opening for someone to kind of take up the mantle on behalf of the women candidates of the Me Too movement, which is kind of where she'd focused her efforts. She didn't gain a lot of traction on that, hence her withdrawal. But I think that it does kind of open up that lane for someone else, perhaps one of the female candidates, to kind of take up that mantle going forward.
Although just quickly, is there time for someone to fill that lane, given that the race, at least looking at the polls of late, seems to show it as a three-way contest among Biden, Sanders, and Warren?
Well, absolutely. And I think that, frankly, like Warren would be the most natural person to maybe sort of start talking more about those types of issues. However, she obviously has a very wide policy portfolio already when it comes to the issues that she wants to address. She's among the wonkier of the candidates. And so, you know, I think that, you know, Gillibrand's departure kind of puts that on the back burner for now.
All right, Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter, thank you as always. You can read more on these stories at Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal and follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington at Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. 6:56 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Powell has to speak up about the trade war. I'm Carl Smith, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Former New York Fed President Bill Dudley suggested that the Fed should raise interest rates in an effort to stop Trump's trade war, and he even suggested to prevent the president from winning election in 2020. This suggestion has been widely condemned as anti-democratic overreach by the Fed. This is without a doubt true. It is also, importantly, bad economics. From an economic perspective, the trade war is similar to a real war that disrupted oil supplies and hampered economic growth. Economists have spent decades studying the impact of oil shocks on the U.S. economy. While exact prescriptions differ, there's a strong consensus that the Fed should lower interest rates to offset oil shocks. This can lead to higher inflation in the short run, but the inflation would be temporary and the cost lower than risking recession. Powell needs to make that clear to markets as they try to understand how the trade war will unfold and what the Fed's response will be. I'm Carl Smith. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPINGO on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Karen.
Futures are higher this morning. Nathan, S&P futures up 28 points. Dow futures up 265. And NASDAQ futures up 98. The DAX in Germany is up 1.2%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 1.49%. And the yield on the 2-year, 1.52%. And the euro, 1.1074. Against the dollar. Bloomberg Surveillance with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow straight ahead. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.